The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is brought to you in collaboration with All Are Welcome Here, whose mission is to support an inclusive, nonpartisan, and positive environment for all in the state of Minnesota and the broader United States. They believe diversity makes the United States great and are committed to taking concrete actions to support that mission and vision. Learn more at allarewelcomehere.us. Welcome back to the Feminist Book Club podcast, a show for dangerous, well-read women. Each week, we explore literature and media through a feminist lens as one small way to reclaim our time, our books, and our stories. Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone. Renee Powers here, and I have such a great episode for you today. I know I say that all the time, but there's loads to share. Our guest is Meg Neeson, the owner of the Irreverent Bookworm, which is Minneapolis's latest woman-owned bookstore, and she and I are chatting all things books. So while we typically feature authors on our shows, every once in a while, I like to switch it up and talk to readers, book nerds, and industry folks. So I'm thrilled to share today's conversation with one of my favorite people. Truly, Meg, you're one of my faves. I'm also excited to announce that we are launching our in-person pickup for Feminist Book Club with the Irreverent Bookworm. So if you're in the Twin Cities and you're a member, you'll have the option of picking up your Feminist Book Club box early each month. And if that's not all, you'll get 20% off your next purchase at the bookstore. Yo, this is so great. And for those of you who aren't members yet, but who are local to the Twin Cities, we'll also have a few extra boxes for sale at the Irreverent Bookworm each month. And if that's not all, we'll be doing in-person book club meetups there, and they'll be open to the public, so you can read along with us and join us for the book club. I am super psyched to call the Irreverent Bookworm our official home away from home for the Feminist Book Club. And you'll hear I say this to Meg in the interview, but I just can't wait to see what magic we're going to create together in 2020. Now, speaking of 2020, speaking of magic, we have teamed up with All Are Welcome Here to start the year off right by amplifying everyday acts of kindness that make our communities a more welcoming place for all. So with this January box, we'll reflect together on how even the smallest gestures, when intentionally done for others, can contribute to a more welcoming world. That's the ultimate goal. Our members are currently voting on the book they'd like to read next, so the book that will be in the January box, but all of the options feature the theme of immigration to coincide with this more welcoming theme. Plus, get excited. Subscribers will receive a signature rainbow All Are Welcome Here window cling in their boxes. If you're in Minnesota, you've seen these. Trust me. The window cling is perfect to stick on your front door, the back window of your car, the whiteboard in your office, anywhere where you want to share that you're fighting for a more welcoming world. All Are Welcome Here was started by graphic designer Jamie Chismar, a proud Minnesotan who grew up in Maple Grove, Minnesota. Jamie was deeply moved and inspired by the show of unity at Maple Grove High School after racist graffiti was found throughout the building in the wake of the 2016 election. The signs of support written by students in response to this graffiti inspired her to make her own sign for her neighborhood with the initial hope of raising money for her local food shelf. She put out a request on Facebook to fill an order for 50 signs. 50 signs. It turned out the demand was much greater than she could have ever imagined. Seriously, you see them everywhere around here. All Are Welcome Here is now a super recognizable brand all around Minnesota and the Midwest, with their colorful rainbow signs translated in multiple languages, from Arabic to Mandarin, from Spanish to Somali. And since November of 2016, they have donated over $60,000 to charity through their sales. Honestly, I am so honored to kick off 2020 with this initiative. So stay tuned. We've got even more exciting announcements for this box, for this coming month, for the entire year. It's going to be fabulous. So if your interest has piqued, you can go ahead and already reserve that January box. You can do that at feministbookclub.com/shop and use code podcast for $5 off. As always, we will donate 5% of that purchase to our charity of the month, which we will announce very soon. Now, on to today's interview. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I have Meg Neeson on the show. Meg is the owner of The Irreverent Bookworm, which is an independent woman and family-owned bookstore now open on the corner of 52nd and Bloomington in South Minneapolis in my neck of the woods. It's a great little corner. There's also, it's next door to Cake Resale, which is a plus size resale shop, and Hot Plate, which is one of my favorite breakfast joints. So it's a great neighborhood. Go check them out. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
I am so delighted to talk to you today. We're going to get into all things bookselling and small business and books and all of those things. But I start every interview with the question, what does it mean to you to be feminist?
What does it mean to be feminist to me? Basically, because I have had a really interesting life experience, and now I have three children, all who are exploring their different gender identities. For me, feminism is just giving everyone an equal playing field, an equal platform, and equal rights to be able to be paid the same for if they can hustle and do the same job. If they have something to say, they are heard just as much as their neighbor. That is feminism to me.
I love it. It seems so simple. It never is.
No.
And I love that you're coming at it from a parent perspective too, and a parent to, like you said, kids that are kind of exploring these questions on their own. How old are the kiddos?
So I have 2 12-year-olds and 1 8-year-old. Right. So they are
a great time to start asking questions.
Yes, exactly.
Cool. All right. Well, you are the owner of The Irreverent Bookworm, which yes. I am obsessed with. Can you talk a little bit about, and you just opened as we're recording like a month or so ago.
On the 14th of September.
Yep, 2019. So you're still feeling things out. But how did you get there? Because I think you're living the dream that so many of our listeners have to, you know, drop everything and open a bookstore.
Right. But yeah,
what's all the steps leading up to it?
It's been a long journey. So first step was obviously deciding that this was actually something feasible, which was kind of a long journey in and of itself, because it started with an offhanded comment by me to my partner when I was rearranging my bookshelves at home one day, like I do.
As one does.
Like, yeah. I was like, oh, I should really start a bookstore. And my partner laughs and looks at me like, no, you should. I'm like, no, I really should. And they look at me like, no, you should. They have their own business. So they already have a kind of a head for that. And so they're like, I'm going to crunch the numbers. And I actually got really angry. I was like, don't make me think this is a possibility unless we're really seriously like, we think we can do this. This is not a joke. And this is my lifelong dream. So they came back and they're like, well, we have feasible numbers. I think that we can do it. And so from there, it was the big giant whirlwind of figuring out, okay, what is this going to look like? What kinds of books are we going to sell? Are we going to do all used? Are we going to do some new? And so from that point, we then just started buying books. Every chance that we could get. Our bedroom looked like a hoarder den of bins and bins and bins of books, literally surrounding our bed on top of our dressers. it was intense. And we didn't even know when we would get a actual retail space. So we probably thought it would be about 2 years until we were to find the space. But it turns out we got this spot a lot sooner. And so we jumped hard. And here we are in this space. But it takes a lot of labor and actually a lot of physical labor to So I stopped being able to go to the gym because I had to run this, but it turns out I am even more fit than when I had my membership to the YWCA.
Absolutely. I think that was one of the unexpected perks of having a book business, was just all of the heavy lifting.
Getting swole without even having to think about, like, I'm going to go to the gym today.
Right. So how long ago was that conversation with your partner?
Let's see. I think that was about, not last year, February. Wow. Yeah, I think it was like February of last year, if I'm not mistaken. That's January or February. We kind of started talking about that. That's kind of the time of year where I tend to get really antsy and make strange decisions. And that was one of them. So.
And were you employed at the time?
I was not. So I have worked previously outside the home, but for the last couple of years, we're a blended family. So we have three different kids from different parents, and we just decided that we needed someone to be there on the home front to do all of the taxi service, to be there to do meals. Because like I mentioned earlier, my partner also has their own business. So we were pretty busy going back and forth. And I said, you know what, I would actually like to have the opportunity to be home and waiting for the kids when they get back, drive them to their friend's house, drive them to their gymnastics and soccer and all that. So I did that for a few years. And then the kids started to get older, more independent, and I knew I needed something else to do with my time.
And so you decided to open a bookstore. I mean,
yes,
obviously. So what would be something that would surprise a listener about owning an independent bookstore?
Well, I think there are good things and bad things. I think overall, what is really surprising is that you, even if you don't know much about the book business, which what I know about the book business, at least when I started, was absolute zero. But if you do have really a passion for reading and a passion for sharing that with people, that does take it a long way. It is a lot of work, but if you really have that spark within you, I think that you could get farther, even just on that knowledge that you have inside of you, or the ability and desire to learn can take you really far without even having really read the manual.
There's a manual? Nobody told me there was a manual.
You know, actually, there is. There's this big, fat manual called Paz and Associates, and they tell you, okay, you need to go and read this. This is like the Bible for booksellers, and it tells you down to the letter of like where you should get your shelves, where you should there's like all these rules about where you should be getting things, who you should be talking to, who should do your lighting, who should do this sort of thing. And I gotta be honest and say we probably applied about, I read probably about 5%, my partner probably read about 10, and we applied about 2%.
I love that. Throwing out the manual entirely. I didn't know there was a literal manual.
Yes!
I've been figuring all of this out on my own. Now I'm just curious about it. Now I have to, do you sell it? Because I'll come by and get it.
I know. And we actually were gifted a really old book on book selling, but it's very outdated. Feel free to come in and check it out anytime, but it's mostly like ordering by mail to distributors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I don't do that. So, so what is a day in the life of Meg the bookseller like these days?
Well, these days, if it's kind of your normal day and I'm working a full shift, I'm still a mom. I'm still kind of the primary parent. So I get up and I get my kiddos ready for school. And after they're out and about, then I head over to the shop. If anyone's listening who's worked retail, it's very, very similar to that. You just, you know, running through the opening procedures, all that boring stuff, turning on lights. But then it also is processing trade-ins that we get from people, because we do take in secondhand books for store credit. So it's going through literally each and every book that we get in on a trade-in or that we purchase used for through some other vein. We look through every single one. We open it up. We look at the pages, we assess the damage, and we price everyone according to how we feel the condition is, the relevancy, etc. So every single book that's on our shelves has been touched, processed by one of our team members, which is right now three people, but mostly me and my partner. So a lot of the time is spent doing that, straightening the shelves, putting in orders of new books, and people can special order in new books for us. So it's processing those new special orders online, looking through, if I have a quiet moment or two, I'm looking through books selling blogs, blogs by readers, Instagram accounts, Facebook accounts, what books are getting buzz from people that I think are reliable and interesting, what books are kind of flying under the radar but look like they could kind of be a dark horse. That's a big part of my job. And then also just kind of allowing myself to listen to my instincts about certain books that aren't necessarily getting buzz, but I feel might be interesting to have on my shelves.
Okay. So right now what's under the radar, do you think? What's the order that you're like, ooh, I'm going to buy, if you were talking stocks, you know?
Yeah. If I'm talking stocks, well, something that's under the radar. Now, this is not a new release by any means. This book came out a very, very long time ago, but there's still, it went out of print for a while, but it's back in. One of my favorite books of all time that I will up and down recommend to anyone who loves books and bookstores. It's called 84 Charing Cross Road by Helene Hampf. And it is a book about a longtime correspondence between a woman in New York who is a writer and avid reader and an antiquarian bookseller in London. And their correspondence from her acquiring books through this shop and then the relationship she builds with the bookseller at that store. And it is just a wonderful, magical, and true story.
That's awesome. I've never heard of that.
Exactly. Not a lot of people have. And I was introduced to it by my wonderful mother when I was growing up, and it's been one of my favorites since. So I will always order and stock that and suggest it to people who are really true lovers of books.
So in terms of trade-in from the other side of the desk, I'm curious if you have, what are you looking for those of us who have big book collections that we're maybe trying to cull? What do used bookstores kind of look for? What are some best practices?
Best practices, and at least these are kind of the rules that we have, which seem to be pretty standard across the board. Although it varies between bookstores what they will take as far as condition-wise, we're pretty picky. So we're looking for books in very, very good condition. Now, they don't have to be mint, but the best compliment we've received several times in shop is that people can't tell that the books on the shelves are used because we take them in very good condition. So we appreciate that. People not bringing us books that are super, super beat up and bent, and we don't take books that are super marked up, lots and lots of highlighting and notes in the margin. A few are okay, but
a few are fun.
Yeah, I do. I love, that's part of the reason why I love used books so much, is kind of the connection to another person that has held that book before you and the bits of it that they enjoyed or made them laugh or made them think. I do enjoy the notes in the margin.
I think it just adds to the reading experience.
Yes, exactly. And it's one of the reasons why secondhand books will always be my first love.
Aww.
So, yes, we provide new books, but used, that's where my passion is. But yeah, it's all about condition and then, relevancy. Like if you're trying to offload a book on, computer programming from 1992, it's probably not going to sell. We're probably not going to do much with that. But we carry pretty much a little bit of everything. We want everyone to come in here and be able to find something, no matter what your background is, no matter what your political views, your age, your life circumstances. We want to have a book for anyone who walks through our doors.
I mean, last time I was there, I had five books in my hands. And I was thinking, listen, Renee, you can buy books at wholesale. You're a bookseller yourself. But yes, there was just, it was just something about, and I ended up just getting three. I thought it was two, but then I got one as a gift. I've already read both of them. And I mean, like you said, they're relevant. There was a Jessamyn Ward book that I bought.
Nice.
And Homegoing by Yagi Yassi, which is, you know, super recent and in great condition, like you said. And I was just like thrilled that I found two books that had been on my TBR for a long time that I could purchase from you and support local economy. It was just great. So one of my favorite things about The Irreverent Bookworm is your like found stuff, the stuff that you have found in books. You've got it up on a wall, just this collage of flotsam jetsam of things in the book.
I'm looking at it right now because I'm sitting in the room where they are.
Some of the favorite things you have found in donated books.
Okay. I think one of my favorites was a note that was written to, I think probably a mother and a sister from one sister, but it was tucked in and it just said to mom and Birdie, because I love you so very, very much. And it's some of those sentimental notes, love notes. Sometimes we get, you know, anniversary cards that have been used as bookmarks and forgotten and left behind. And now we do try and return it to people. If it's in a trade-in, we will usually contact people if it seems like something that might have sentimental value. But a lot of the books that we do find through book sales, those things are long gone, and the likelihood that you're ever going to find the person that it came from. The weirdest thing I found in a book was, thankfully unused, but a condom in wrapper as a bookmark. So there was that. And
I feel bad that person's not using it.
I know. Like, oh, I don't think you meant to give that to me. And then I'm looking at one we just found recently, which is a lovely photo. Looks like it's from the 80s of a little girl in front of these clearly homemade Mickey and Minnie Mouse birthday cakes, looking incredibly serious in a very fluffy dress.
Oh. And
it's just too good. So I'm looking at it right now on my board. I had to put that one out right away.
That's awesome. What about surprise book donations? Have you gotten anything that you're like, why did somebody give me this or trade this in?
Well, you know, I'm trying to think. Most of the ones where there have been things that are worth something, people tend to know. They're a little bit more careful. So I don't know. The one I think that was the most surprising that we got in on a donation from someone was a book about John F. Kennedy, apparently during World War II, and it was an older edition, and it turned out to be worth a decent amount of money.
Wow.
And we did contact the person who brought it in. They're like, no, don't care. Have it. I'm like, okay, thank you. So if anyone's interested, that's sitting in our case. Oh, so okay. If anyone feels like buying a $60 book, which is not my personal gig, but you know.
You share a lot of funny titles and things that you just come across on your Instagram stories. Your Instagram stories are a national treasure. What are some of the funny ones lately that you've come across?
Oh, man. Okay, let's see. I just actually... two that I sold that were my favorite funny title books from our oddly specific or have you strangely specific section was 365 Days of Monastery Soups.
Tis the season, though.
It is. And they genuinely looked like great soups.
I mean, you're in a monastery, you don't have a whole lot else to do.
No. You're praying, you're cooking, you know, and
I would trust some, what is it, nuns or brothers or monks.
Exactly, totally. And then, yeah, we sold the other one, actually another soup themed, that one that was my ultimate favorite, which was The Secrets of Jesuit Soup Making.
Oh, God.
Like, religious orders and bulk soups apparently are...
Has there ever been anything more Minnesotan, though?
No, there has not.
Okay, so you mentioned your oddly specific bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk about how your bookshelves are named, because it is such a delight. It makes you want to go to every single shelf and read them. So tell us some of your bookshelves.
I think the first one that I ever did and decided to get cheeky was our pagan and witchcraft section, which I named If You Weigh As Much As a Duck, which has turned out to be mixed reactions, because you would only understand that if you watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So I've had kind of a 50-50 split of people are like, ha, that's hilarious. And people who are like, what? I don't get it. So I did actually eventually go back and put witchcraft and paganism in parentheses.
Over. I get it.
That's, but it still says if you weigh as much as a duck. It just has an explanation for people who don't immediately understand. And then let's see, I'm trying to think of what I think my other favorite one that is probably I'm going by giggle favorite. So the things that I hear people laughing at the most in shop and commenting about is our politics section, which I named Mostly White Men in Suits Making Questionable Decisions.
Yes, that was the one that I was thinking of, and I was hoping you would bring that up. Otherwise, I was going to ask you about it. Because, yes. And it's all walks of, or, you know, all kinds of politics.
Yep.
But political decisions, questionable or otherwise, tend to be made by white men in suits.
It's true. And I did put mostly in the title because thankfully that is beginning to change.
Yes.
And finally.
Yes.
Some strong women are getting some attention. Thank you very much. So it's been long enough. And so the mostly thankfully gets to be there. It's not just white men in suits now. It's also...
So it's worth a wander just to go read the labels on the shelves. And the thing is, they're a little, they're not in your face. You have to go looking for them. They're just little mm-hmm. labels. And once you realize these little labels, like you said, are cheeky. I think that's a great word for it. You're like, well, now I have to go back and do the whole thing. I have to read the whole store. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. So much fun. And so go follow them on Instagram, everybody, because that gets shared on Instagram as well.
Yeah, we're very active on Instagram and Facebook too.
So much fun. Okay, so you're a woman-owned, family-owned bookstore. Mm-hmm. It is a family-owned. I mean, your partner's in there. Your kiddos are in there.
Yep.
It's so great. Why is it important for consumers to support independent booksellers when we could just get it on Amazon for probably the same price?
Right. And, you know, this, I mean, being perfectly honest, the same price and sometimes less. And the how rapidly you can get that is a major factor as well. I know I'm an impatient reader. If I want to read something, I do. I want to have it now. And especially in the Minnesota winters, the temptation to just have it delivered and not leave the house is a real thing. But I think a few reasons why it's really, really important to support local indie bookstores as well as all other independent businesses is, you know, when you're spending money here, it is going not just to a big company, but it's going literally back into your exact community or into the bookstore to keep it alive. So right now, yeah, we're running the bookstore with the money that people spend in our shop. We're also going to our local co-ops. We are donating to our local charities. We are, you know, in and around the neighborhood supporting our local schools. We have a vested interest in the area around us and the people there. And so you get all around you. If you live in a strong community, you get to see the positive effects of that. If you have strong independent businesses or people who have a very vested interest in the world around them, because it is a lot of work. So you have to be passionate about your community in order to go into business in your community, mm-hmm. Because you do rely a lot on the hopes that people will come in and support you right back. So also getting your books online super rapid, great. If you know what you're looking for, that's fun. But you do skip the browsing experience, mm-hmm. which is always my favorite thing about going into local bookstores. And for the record, I do actually go to other local bookstores when I'm not in my shop. And I should have absolutely no reason to buy books anywhere else. But I also, there are several books around this, bookstores around the cities that I just adore and would never stop going to.
I just went to Milkweed for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
It was fantastic. I saw Gita Vanasco speak there, and I think
excellent.
Her on the show in the new year. But yeah, no, I hear you. I like, you are my bookstore, but I cheat on you occasionally.
Yeah. Well, and that's good. I mean, by and large, the at least from what I know from the Midwest and our general area, the indie bookseller community is incredibly supportive. Everyone kind of sticks up for everybody else. Mm-hmm. It's not a hugely, I mean, it is competitive. It is business, but it is very much a supportive community. And we have, you know, message boards where people are coming to each other with questions about business, questions about stuff. And we do see other booksellers coming into our shop as well. And it's fun to pay social calls to each other when we're not in our own shops running the show. So yeah, it's great. I have my favorite bookstores because I still do. Like, I have my own bookshop, but I want to browse somewhere else also and see somebody else's take on even some of the same books that I have. How are they displaying them? Where are they putting them? What books are their favorites? What are their employee recommends? And so those are just things that you can read the reviews, but you don't necessarily get online in that same way of people within your immediate community, what they're reading, what they think is powerful.
Absolutely. So. And I think there's something about a local bookstore that it's just the experience, not just the experience of browsing, but the experience of knowing your bookseller, knowing mm-hmm. this person who is making you very personal recommendations.
Yeah.
On that note, let's talk some recommendations because it's kind of the last minute holiday gift giving season, mm-hmm. the time this goes up. So let's do some like rapid fire book recommendations to close this out.
All right.
So you've already mentioned 84 Cherry Crossroad by Helene Hampf.
Yes.
Who would you recommend that for?
Your family bibliophile. So anyone who really loves books, and I mean the physical books, not just e-readers, but those who you know have been lovers of the physical books and bookstores themselves. That is just a great story. And it's a really short read, but it's a really touching story and also a lot of fun infused with a lot of humor.
Okay. So now I'm thinking your typical dad, like your typical, you know, late 50s, Midwestern white guy who loves football and maybe like the occasional John Grisham.
See, that's the one section where I kind of somewhat struggle. And I'm trying to see if we can sometime employ someone who knows a little bit more along those lines. Because my sports section is titled sports ball for a reason. I absolutely have no idea.
I could give you some suggestions. I love sports.
Yes. I would love that. Like, send a list over anytime. Yeah,
yes. I was like, you're not gonna put me on the spot right now because I would watch recon. Okay. Yes. But I could send you some suggestions for sure.
That would be awesome.
Okay. So maybe like if we went a historical route for this dad archetype.
Right. For the dad archetype, I would do one of the best-selling ones right now that came out that's just an incredibly great book is called The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee by David Treuer.
That's a National Book Award shortlister, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And that was one, it's a nice thick read. Good weight to it, and a very, very, very important narrative. So, and even for, I think, dads who have kind of read it all as far as history goes and you watched all the PBS shows, I think this might be something that it would be a fresh perspective even for them. So
this is so selfish that I'm absolutely going to get that for my father-in-law.
I love it.
Okay. So on the flip side, what would you give your like cool mom or let's go like, again, 50s, 60s, Midwest mom archetype.
My mom reads British literature, so that's a whole different kit and caboodle. But I think for the typical Midwestern mom, I have, unless they've read it, which is a very, very strong chance, Where the Crawdads Sing has been one that has, I cannot keep it on the shelf. It has gotten across the board incredible reviews. Along those same lines, I think we have great both new and used copies of Toni Morrison. All of those books are worth a revisit, even for moms who might have read them in their younger years. I think we have like beautiful sets that you can get with all of those in there. So they're more of a nonfiction or, because we also have essays by Toni Morrison as well. Really great.
I'm in the middle of The Bluest Eye for the first time right now.
Oh, nice. That's such a powerful. It's hard when you go, we say like, it's good. It's hard. It's good.
Yeah. Okay. Your best friend, 30 something, like, cool best friend, you look up to her, she's, you know, taking on the world, maybe starting family, maybe has a family.
Oh, okay. So for fiction, my favorite one right now that I have on my shelf and on my personal recommended list is My Sister the Serial Killer. Just a dark but fun quick read, but also with some deeper nuances in there as well, especially for those who have sisters. I don't, but I know many women who do. Mm-hmm. That's a really great read that I recommend. Along with, these are all new books, mind you, that I'm recommending just because they're the freshest I can think of, but one that, did become critically acclaimed, but did not tend to sell as well or get as much buzz as I would have liked is, called Three Women.
Yes.
By Lisa Tedio. And I thought that book was absolutely incredibly powerful. And so that one's too is also a gritty read, but a good one.
And that one's nonfiction.
Correct.
Yeah. It takes place in Indiana, which is where I'm from. So that's, yeah, I think I have that downloaded and haven't gotten, yeah, to be in a mood for a book like that.
Yeah, you do. You really do, because it is, it's gritty and it can be somewhat triggering if you've been in situations that they touch upon in that book. But it is I think really worth a read and worth the thought process behind it. But I was lucky enough to read an advanced reader copy, and that copy I have marked up to high heaven. I have so many notes in the margin and so much highlighting.
So what are your kids reading right now? What can we, the 12 range, what can we kind of?
Oh, see, that is my favorite. And actually what I tell people, and when eventually we do employee bios, which has fallen along the wayside, but eventually we'll get there. my area of expertise is middle grade literature. So, but I touch on the younger kids too, because I have children. So I've read all the paper, you know, the picture books and all of that as well. But middle grade fiction is my favorite, and I still read it. So right now, my gal, one of my most avid reader, is reading through the Hunger Games and the Divergent series again. And apparently that's been hitting the middle schoolers like wildfire. It's been selling again.
Really?
Yes. It both those series have been just flying off the shelves, and we can't keep the used copies in enough for their... It just hit a resurgence. So that's hot among the middle schoolers. And then what I would hands down recommend for even that age, my kiddos are, two of them are 12 years old, but they're pretty advanced readers. So that's not necessarily books for everyone. It could be a little harder to get through for kiddos with shorter attention span, like my lovely other daughter. She... not so much into the thick books, but she loves the books by Karen Cushman, Midwife's Apprentice, Catherine Called Birdie, narratives about really strong, independent, saucy girls during the Middle Ages.
And love that.
Yeah, it's just major fun. Some of my favorites from when I was a kid as well. So those are shorter ones, a little bit of a quicker read for kiddos who are a little more artistically or physically inclined, and not as much the ones that will curl up for, you know, 3 hours and, you know, don't bother me, I have a book. So also another series that I recommend to everybody, if you've read Harry Potter, all of that, the Inkheart trilogy.
Oh, I need to read this one.
Oh, it's absolutely magical. It's set in... on the premise that you can actually make and create worlds and make things happen through books and through writing. So it's kind of a bibliomancy, as it were, like book magic and different worlds literally inside of books. And it's just a real treat for adults and kids. Just wonderful, little bit dark, but fantastic.
I'm such a word nerd. And the fact that you just spat out bibliomancy, my heart grew three sizes like the Grinch. What are you reading right now?
I am reading this absolutely so far fantastic book that just came out called Midwestern Strange. It is all about, like the title is Hunting Monsters, Martians, and the Weird in Flyover Country. So talking about this guy coming in and interviewing people with a really open mind about certain Midwestern phenomenons, like certain alien landings, Mothman, you know, the beast of so-and-so. And it's just great. 'Cause I have a soft spot for paranormal stuff. And this is just way too much fun. So if we're talking book recommendations, that might be a fun one as well for anyone in your family kind of into paranormal stuff, you know, the kind of cool brother archetype, that would be what I would definitely recommend for that. So far I haven't got to the end, but that is what I'm currently deep into.
I heard a review of this on a podcast and I was just like, that sounds, well, as a, you know, Midwesterner born and bred right through and through, never mm-hmm leaving, it sounded perfect. It sounds like a great book. I'm so glad that you're giving it a so far a great review too.
Yeah.
All of these will be listed in the show notes, so do not fret, dear listener. You'll have lots of links. One of the ways that if you're not in the Twin Cities area and you want to support Irreverent Bookworm, you can always read through Libro FM, which is an audiobook mm-hmm service. Do you want to speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. Libro FM is fantastic. So it's basically just like your Audible setup. However, instead of going through Amazon, it goes through and your indie bookstore of choice. It does. When you sign up for it, they'll ask you for the name of your desired bookstore. That bookstore gets proceeds from the sale of that audiobook. So all of our listeners who come into the store and sign up for that, which you can sign up online, sign up in the shop with us, we'll give you recommends, can go through and we get the profits from that, which is absolutely wonderful. And they have a great catalog. I have never searched for something that I haven't found on there. And it's a great resource for people in the bookselling world as well, because you can get advanced listening copies through cool Libro.
Yep. Do you listen to audiobooks?
I do. When I am actually, I listen to them in shop often. So when I'm processing books, kind of looking through and doing more manual labor, I'm on audiobooks all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we are out of time. I could just, like I said, before we started recording, I was like, I have a whole page of questions and I need to do this because I just want to know all of the behind the scenes. Also because I love you and I just want to talk to you forever. Okay. So.
Mutual.
All right, the last questions that I ask everybody, and it might feel redundant, so I'll give you a second, is if you have a book recommendation, and I usually say of a book that's not your own, mm-hmm, but you're not an author yet.
No.
So if you think about our readers are very bookish, or our listeners are very bookish people, very mm-hmm progressive, you know, they want to read intersectionally, interculturally.
Yep.
What would you recommend for our readers? What would you recommend for our audience?
Reading, listening audience. Exactly. I have to say, I'm trying to narrow it down now. I'm thinking like this one, yes, and this one, and this one. From classic literature, one that kind of flies under the radar would be I Capture the Castle by Dottie Smith. Mm. It is a kind of coming of age story set in England, and it's protagonist is journaling kind of through her experience of coming to terms with her life circumstances through first love interests and their financial situation. And it's just, it's a both delicious and thoughtful read for lovers of sci-fi and fantasy. I love a strong female character, and the Apoorsen, let's see, so it's called the Old Kingdom series now. It's changed names like three times because it keeps adding books. So it was like a trilogy, you know, it's a Chronicles. The Old Kingdom series by Garth Nix, just very, very written by a man, but very complex female characters. Like, you really feel that he's thought this out, and he actually writes the female characters stronger than the male characters.
That's a nice change of pace.
It is. And actually one of my, we're not really good friends anymore, former friends, read through it and actually was frustrated and angry because he didn't like that the male characters were being played as kind of more of the damsels in distress, if I may, with that sort of thing. So
bye.
And I was like, I don't know if this friendship is gonna last very long. I think we're gonna run into some difficulties.
Yeah, those are two great recommendations, and fresh. I haven't, and even though I Capture the Castle is old, but nobody has recommended them before, so thank you for that. And these are all new, I think.
Wonderful.
Everything you've recommended has not been recommended on the show before. So,
and that's great. So these last two ones that I mentioned are, you know, older books, and they're ones that, you know, are available secondhand as well. They're not just your fresh picks that have just come out. They are available in different editions. So that's much fun.
Well, where can we find The Irreverent Bookworm online? What's your best way of connecting with listeners?
Ooh, I think, well, my favorite way is through, we do have a website, and it's very comprehensive. It's www.irrevbooks.com. So that's IRREV books.com. But we also have a Facebook, The Irreverent Bookworm, just Facebook/The Irreverent Bookworm. That's where we do a bit more, I run our social media. I'll give myself credit. It just sounds so much more diplomatic when you say we. But yeah, that's where I do a little bit longer posts. I kind of get into the more meaty nitty gritties of book selling, or some of the things I'm really passionate about. But through Instagram is kind of where I throw out a bit more of my rapid fire stuff. My Instagram story is where I'll post most of my you know, of the moment funny finds and, you know, amusing little anecdotes throughout the day often. So there's different ways to connect with us, and they're all fun. So at least I think so.
I enjoy it. So I will leave links to all of that in the show notes. Thank you so, so much for joining me today. I think this is going to be really a fun conversation to visit. So I really appreciate you. I appreciate The Irreverent Bookworm. I appreciate everything you've done for Feminist Book Club so far. And I can't wait to see what magic we make in 2020.
Agreed. Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. A great way to start my day, because the shop's opening up in about less than an hour here. So I'm going to start up the process. But this was a great way to start another day of books.
Happy reading.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As always, a rating and review in the podcast app of your choice goes a long way in supporting feminist media. We'd love to have you join the Feminist Book Club subscription box, a community-driven subscription box which features a book of the month and products from women and queer-owned businesses delivered directly to your doorstep. This is an easy way to vote with your dollars, as you'll be supporting this podcast, small women and queer-owned businesses, and the charity beneficiary of the month, which receives 5% of total sales. Use code PODCAST for a discount on any subscription package. Learn more about the box and get the show notes for today's episode at feministbookclub.com. See you next time.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.